This is Building Noble Hearts, a production of the Suzuki Association of the Americas. I'm your host, Margaret Watts Romney. Today, we're looking at just one environment created by one teacher and finding themes that can be applied to good teaching everywhere, such as humor, analysis, and artistry. We're dipping back to a series of recordings, interviews made a number of years ago with people who studied with Shinichi Suzuki in Japan in decades past. In their voices, I hear curiosity and admiration as they remember their time in Matsumoto. Also, I hear the inspiration, wisdom, and gratitude that they've kept with them since they left. So while we're working on the full episodes for Season 2 with new topics, multiple guests, and music, we will occasionally release these Matsumoto memoirs. Simple storytelling, straight from the people who were there, lightly edited for clarity and without narration. Our story starts in the 1970s in Ohio, where Sarah Hirsch was studying music. She loved playing the violin, was curious about teaching, and happened to have a very lucky locker assignment. Welcome to this Matsumoto memoir from Sarah Hirsch.
Well, I went to Oberlin College, and there was a teacher trainee there who was from Matsumoto because Oberlin had had a Suzuki program going, and she was employed to be teaching American kids. So this Japanese gal happened to have a locker right behind mine. And I was an undergraduate student at the time. So I got interested. I talked to Kako. I would watch her students. And when Dr. Suzuki came to Eastman to get an honorary doctor's degree, Kako convinced me that we should go together. So we went up there from Oberlin. And to see that relationship, to see that student, former student, but to see the love and care, that was the special moment. And I realized that's a mentor. That Suzuki is a wonderful mentor, and that I was really looking forward, if I could possibly work with him. That would be the thrill of a lifetime. So without knowing exactly how to do it, I went ahead and kind of applied. And what it turns out is that really anyone who wanted to study with Suzuki, if you were from a foreign country, he figured if you were willing to get the visa, the plane ticket, etc., that's all he needed to know. Those were the qualifications, that you were eager. So he took me on, and I went over one summer to study with him, then came back, finished my senior year of college, and went over there to be in the teacher training program. When I first met him, he was the sage, the mentor, the elder statesman. It was a moment of formality to be presented things. But then to see him actually get to work, and when he was working with children, you see already the child in him, the spark of life that inspired him and that he found in everyone and connected with. So it really, it's the synergy, I think, that I won't say surprised me, but thrilled me to see that he valued the way people work together and found that motivation is going to spring from that. So he helped me learn that studying violin was not a difficult process or a cerebral process, but rather fun. So other times that were fun were tea times, because especially if there were foreign guests, teacher trainees would busy around, would bring tea and all of this. But he was hysterical. He would tell some wonderful, the story of his turquoise necktie. He was in Germany, a young man, debonair, trying to be, and he went to a party, and another gentleman saw him and said, "That's the most gorgeous turquoise tie you're wearing. It's just stunning." So Suzuki thanked him, very politely, I'm sure. And, a couple weeks passed. They have this salon society. They're all, visiting, playing music, etc. "You wore this tie." The same guy came up and said, "That is the most gorgeous tie." He thanked him again. So the third time that the guy admired the tie, Suzuki said, "Okay, you love it. It's yours." My dissertation was an examination of his teacher development program and his studio teaching. So in that process, I transcribed all my lessons, everything that he'd said, because I'd audiotaped them. For him, those values, it's really pretty simple. His values, love, respect, service, and they would just shine in his work. That amazed me, that you could see in a little phrase or a little moment of any lesson along the way, those values were right there, and he was willing to share them with you. I mean, you were putting yourself in the hands of someone who's really working on character development, working on ability, on sensitivity. I mean, these are issues of a person rather than of
a musical phrase.
So he could inspire that sort of trust. There's just something in the eyes. You could feel that. And of course, from the very youngest toddler right forward, you could feel that you were accepted. He's told marvelous tales of the child who came in to play for him, who frankly could do nothing that a violinist would think was correct, held the instrument poorly, the bow was awful, the sound was hideous, it looked like it was painful to play, and there was the, you know, why am I doing this? So, you know, with all of those things that a normal teacher would just be going, you know, I have this list that we must dive in. But instead, Suzuki said, thank you for playing. Yes, to celebrate the aspect that was there to honor. So he started with honoring the person's contribution. When you start there, you have a relationship, and that relationship's built on trust, and then he could teach that child anything. His lessons would be sort of half and half. You'd start with tonalization, and then you'd perform your repertoire. During tonalization, he's standing up, he's working with you. You play for maybe 30 seconds, and then he gives you, he plays something, and your job is to model that, to echo that. So it's very close and very vital. And it's also great education because you see the illustration, and you try it, and you see the illustration, and you try that. You're coming closer and closer to your model. So there's that kind of interaction, and that put him on the level with you. I mean, he's willing to do this as many times as it takes for you to get it. He always shifted things a little, so it appeared to be something new. Let's take it, let's view it from this vantage point. Now let's go over there. So that kind of collaboration was marvelous. Then the other half of his lesson was to hear our repertoire and to work on our sound, our sensitivity. Really, he could have listened for 20 seconds and made his judgment, but he was sophisticated and formal and kind enough to listen to the whole work, you know, 15 minutes sometimes. But he would take it all in because he wanted you to know, again, your performance was accepted. So while he was busy working with you on technique, it was not the case where, well, therefore you weren't ready to really perform or to share or to express. He let you know that your expressions, even though maybe your tools weren't the greatest, but your musical expressions were valued. The one-on-one lessons, this was the high point of the week for me, the absolute high point of the week. Sometimes you'd get more than one lesson a week, but certainly one. I remember a time when I had played my piece, done tonalization, played one piece. We could have ended the lesson, and I said, could I play my Bach? I'd like to play my Bach for you if you have time. And he said, I have 33 years. Through those individual lessons, he was pulling the best out of me, and I didn't know it was there. So that's very special, and I'll always thank him and treasure that. In tea time, he would tell us, he would put on a record. And it might be Casals, it might be Kreisler, it might be Jeanette Nevers, all these wonderful, wonderful performances. Teacher trainees would sneak into his room when he wasn't there, and we would, you know, go through his CD and LP collection because they were wonderful performances, things you couldn't get. So he'd put something on, he'd play it, and he would get so excited. He would be reliving how he had this sort of scientific side of him. It's like the artistic and the scientific side merging so that, you know, he would be swept away by that particular performance, but then challenged to figure it out. How was it done? And so he'd pull out his violin and show you, you know, you'd be listening, the music is just going along, and he'd pick one note out and he'd copy it, and the music's going along. He'd, oh, I think he does this way. But he brought to life what an artist might do, made you feel that the artist was right there with you, and that you could take steps to find that artistry, that artistry is not something very high up or far away, but artistry is something in every life, something that we can approach and indeed we can find. There are the fun stories. Suzuki would sit on one side of the stage, there'd be a screen, and the child or the player would be on another side of the screen, so the audience could see both of them, but Suzuki couldn't see the person playing. And the person would play, and Suzuki would say, "Oh, that was a wonderful performance. I really am so glad you played for me. Now, if you wanted technically to improve your work, you could probably lower that right elbow of yours about an inch, and you know, your pinky on that left hand, if it were curved, it'd be slightly better." And you know, from the sound and from the feedback that the sound gave him, he could construct how the sound was being produced. I knew how to work my way towards a mechanical, technical kind of a solution. But to build the bridge, you know, how am I going to get from being able to use my analytical tools towards this kind of nebulous artistry business? So I had to work through a lot of that. But through it all, whether it's a Beethoven concerto, Nevers, he found a time in every lesson to also to inspire me and help me reach towards artistry. He's going to use that potential to speak musically right from day one. And I think he does that even with young children. That's the beauty of the way he works, that artistry is, again, not something up high, not at the end, not something you do in college, but artistry is something you can reach as a three-year-old. Now, I'm thinking also of my students, my college students, since we've just had our commencement. I have seen such a wonderful development in those students, those college students. It's a journey to understand Suzuki teaching principles and to put them to work in a fashion that rings true for that new teacher. This is not a blueprint. This is not a recipe. It's not a series of steps. So for them to find how they can think about these principles and bring those alive in their classrooms, it's been a journey, but I've been there for that journey. It's been so wonderful to see that journey. I just am so thrilled. And to celebrate, really, that journey, it shows me what Suzuki, a little bit, what Suzuki felt when he had my graduation. When I think back to graduation from the Matsumoto program, he would suggest to you, "I think you're about ready to graduate." And that could happen any time. It didn't happen only in May or in December or, you know, there's no month. There was no year attached to it. It could happen after a few months, after a couple years. Different people, different tracks, different feel. So he would suggest, you know, it may take you by surprise. I know it took me by surprise. And it's this great affirmation. But then he wanted you to have the opportunity to agree. Do you also feel you're ready to graduate? So then when you have both agreed to graduate and then you plan a graduation recital, wow, is this a celebration? And it's something you know you're sure of. So I can remember that I graduated after 3 years of study. I knew that I had absorbed what I could absorb. What he could give me, I feel that that is such a part of me that it can't be lost. Yeah, it's a boundless sense of possibility that Suzuki has given us, that in any situation there's always something constructive we can do. And if we do nothing, that was a choice. We can't go backwards, that's not a choice. But we can choose to do nothing or we can choose to do something. Let's choose to do something. How simple and yet how profound. And once you've chosen to do something, of course you're going to choose something positive and then get to it. Take a step. Yeah. Suzuki said, "Isn't it wonderful to have a profession where we can walk together holding hands?" I think that's part of the way we'll do this. That no one student or no one individual is going to be another Suzuki. But if we walk together holding hands, we can do a lot.
Thank you to Sarah Hirsch for permission to use her interview. Our theme music, Sun Up, is composed by Stephen Katz and Derek Snyder and performed by the Snyder Cello Army. If you heard ideas here that have been helpful to your own teaching environment, help us spread the word about the podcast by giving us a rating and review on iTunes. Thanks for joining us in Building Noble Hearts, and we'll see you next time.